The Society of the Inner Light came in for an enormous amount of criticism because the Society was never represented at occult conferences. No one from the Society of the Inner Light would lecture or appear as a representative, they were completely isolated. Hence, the Society was considered to be stuffy and possibly incompetent. The objective had changed following in a plain instruction so that now the prime function of the organization was to operate on the group mind consciousness and ultimately on the world condition. Dion Fortune had publishing as a legitimate and mundane channel into the ordinary life of the culture because people were interested in buying books. Books have an interesting effect because they act as filters. If you read a book and like it, then presumably you are in tune with most of the ideas. So the book gathers together those of a like mind and eliminates the disinterested. Whoever read Dion Fortune's books and approved was quite likely to go along with the practices and precepts of her group. She found that this was a legitimate way into the group mind quite consciously and quite normally. This was a propaganda channel and it also acted as the sole recruiting tool for the society. The books acted as a useful filter and they were at least one step in that person's selection. In the early days of the organization, Dion Fortune did give a lot of public lectures and a study course was set up which consisted of a mixture of lectures by her and other senior members of the group. Certain homework had to be done which consisted mostly of visualization and the study of the Kabbalah. The society maintained this program for some time, but as the organization grew and became more withdrawn, the public lecture part of the study course stopped as well. It is interesting to note that the society was getting more and more inquiries from interested people who had read Dion Fortune's books but lived in fairly inaccessible parts of the United Kingdom and some of them from abroad. These letters showed a need for another form of training course available to all which could be completed at home prior to invitation and initiation into the group. A correspondence course was developed and it went through various forms, but normally consisted of some printed material which the student had to work through, plus a recommended book which provided most of the essential reading material. The student would read and answer questions on the lesson from both the duplicated material and the book, and he would also perform a daily meditation and record it. The study course was divided into three or four parts and an essay on each part had to be submitted and accepted before the next part could be undertaken. The final part was a screening or a threshold conditioning course, which was supposed to give additional information that would enable the student to decide whether he or she wanted to go into the group. When all of this had been satisfactorily completed and the neophyte was accepted by the society, a ritual initiation followed. It is important to note that at the end of the study course but before the threshold or inking course, there was always an interview with one or more senior people in the organization. This normally took place in the library of No. 3 Queensbury Terrace. The technique would be that the potential candidate was invited along at 11 o'clock in the morning or sometime like that. Possibly coffee and rolls were provided and one of the interrogating members would be present. This member was generally male. Another member who was a psychic sensitive would be in the room as well, but would take no part in the discussion. The interview went on for anywhere from 20 minutes to more than an hour and gave an opportunity for the candidate to ask questions as well. It was a very searching but deceptive meeting. At the end of the discussion, the members would withdraw from the room and decide if the candidate should be invited to continue. If the answer was satisfactory, the members would immediately produce the threshold course material and give it to the student before he went his way. This method worked quite well with these perceptive people in the society. The threshold course took 8 weeks to complete and the society always had that period of time in which they could change their minds, so the threshold was a buffer as well as advanced neophyte training. It must be stressed that in the heyday of the society the neophyte student had absolutely no contact with the organization at all, save through the material of the study course and the one short interview prior to initiation. Therefore the candidate had no opportunity to assess the members or anything else about the organization. Almost everything was taken on trust. It is possible that a slightly arrogant attitude did pervade. The assumption was that the privilege of entering the group was so great there was never any question in anyone's mind as to the ethics of the situation. So it was accepted automatically that the privilege would more than compensate for any inconvenience. In the next step, the candidate would receive a letter inviting him to come for initiation on a particular date. It was as simple as that. The candidate was asked to respond immediately, saying that the date was suitable as it was not expected that there would be any problem. In other words, the Society of the Inner Light would give a date and, generally speaking, it would be understood that it would be accepted. However, in the case of people traveling from abroad or on duty in the armed services, the society was quite flexible. People came from all over the country and the continent as well. It speaks well of the reputation of the Society of the Inner Light that they were able to maintain this attitude for some 10 or 15 years. It is possible to find a great number of faults with this training plan on looking at the material with the benefit of hindsight. The program looked woefully inadequate, but it worked. The fact was that the society did seem to produce quite reasonable people who suffered from a shortage of basic information but made up for it with their dedication and enthusiasm. Success was remarkably consistent, possibly due to the fact that most of the neophytes came into the group through reading some of Dion Fortune's books and were already sympathetic to the general ideas. In later years, the study course was rewritten several times. Some of the versions were a curious mixture of the occult and of a sort neo-Catholicism. By and large, during the society's heyday, the study course was quite short and intellectually simple. The course contained the basic precepts in an easy-to-understand manner. Additional books were recommended and varied according to the time. During one period, Mallory's Morty D/Arthur, a twin-volume work on the Arthurian tradition, was recommended. Most students found this very difficult to understand because of the archaic language and some of the rather quaint expressions. At another time, Jacobi's book on the psychology of C.G. Jung was highly promoted. Dion Fortune's Mystical Kabbalah was always included and was one of the standard books. In earlier times, the cosmic doctrine had been used but was discontinued because most people found it confusing and hard to comprehend. Next headline is, The Inner Plane Adepts. Dion Fortune founded the Society of the Inner Light and guided its development on the basis of direct communication with the Inner Plane Adepti. She declared openly that the bulk of her rituals and knowledge papers were of inner plane origin, in contrast to the material used by the Golden Dawn Initiate, which was written by the human superiors in the lodge. Dion Fortune was an iconoclast and, like Martin Luther, believed that every man and woman should be his own priest. Despite the framework of discipline necessary to any organized group, she encouraged individual approach to the inner plane adepti, implementing their dictum. What you now are, we once were; what we are, you may become; whence we come, you may go. By this approach, she hoped to overcome the fossilization of truth and the superstitious approach to esoteric practice that had become commonplace. Dion Fortune saw the Society of the Inner Light as the physical plane terminal of an organization that had its origins, not in this world, but on the inner planes. That is an important concept, and here the fundamental difference between the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and the Society of the Inner Light is highlighted and the cause of much misunderstanding explained. The truth is that the Golden Dawn and the Society of the Inner Light had completely different aims, and their terms of reference were quite different. The Golden Dawn was a society founded to investigate magic, the so-called Hermetic science, the hidden forces in relationship to man and nature. The Society of the Inner Light, on the other hand, took magic as incidental to its true purpose, which was the implementation of the next phase of human existence, the bringing to earth of the great plan in the mind of God. Magic, it was taught in Dion Fortune's group, was simply a set of tools to help man get to grips with the inner realities. It was taught with the aim of making the initiate more efficient so that he could properly use these techniques more effectively, just as a man with a bulldozer could clear a forest better than a man could with an axe. Dedicated work with occult forces should improve the stature of man, enhance his abilities, increase his capabilities, and rid him of at least the main psychological blockages and personality problems. But all of this is simply incidental. The operation of the occult forces upon him will produce these effects, but the object of the exercise is not simply self-improvement, but to make him a better tool to be used for the regeneration of mankind. The term regeneration means rebirth, and it is considered that if a man cooperates with these great natural forces which are used within occult fraternities, he will experience changes within himself that could be called rebirth. Carl Jung used the term individuation to mean a person's becoming more himself, and Jung saw the goal of the psychological therapeutic process as enabling man to become more perfectly what he should be. This viewpoint would be shared by occult organizations. But it should be stressed that this is incidental to the work of the organization. The object of the training is to prepare him for service to others. The Golden Dawn Lodges were like a group of abstract researchers, fascinated by the details of their methods and apparatus, while the Society of the Inner Light sought to use esoteric science to help the human condition. Dion Fortune's work represented in its day an evolutionary breakthrough in esoteric group development. It was a product of its age, as was the Golden Dawn before it, and the importance of each should be understood as such. The Inner Plane Adepts were absolutely essential to Dion Fortune's work. Her original impetus came from such a contact, and the development of her society was based entirely on inner plane direction. An inner plane adept, by Dion Fortune's definition, is a human being who has evolved beyond the need for further experience in the physical world and who is continuing to evolve on non-physical levels of existence. The men and women who have evolved to this point have a choice of leaving behind all contact with physical human beings and journey on through the realms of glory for their own growth, or, if they decide to follow the path of an inner plane adept, they voluntarily forego the personal freedom in order to help their brothers and sisters still in the flesh. The inner plane adepti are grouped together into like-minded association as we are on this plane. Thus, those who work in the areas that we call occult continue to do so after they cease to need physical bodies. File inner plane adepti have evolved to different degrees of perfection, just as in the physical world we recognize that some men are nobler and wiser than others. Thus there is a continuous graded hierarchy between man in his various stages on this plane and God. These great intelligences have developed beyond the need to incarnate, and all the experience of their lives on Earth have been absorbed into the essence of their present makeup. They no longer live on Earth, they are no longer incarnate, and the tales of their living on the Earth in remote places are quite groundless. There are, of course, high adepts, highly developed and illuminated men of this world, but these are not yet inner plane adepti. It may be that in the future, as evolution proceeds, illuminati of the grade of inner plane adept may remain on Earth instead of passing on to the inner planes, and remain in full contact with both inner and outer planes in order to accomplish certain work. In which case they will remain in incarnation as long as the physical vehicle remains effective. But these would be very special conditions at some time in the future, and certainly do not apply at the present time. 30s, the inner plane adepti had given certain guidelines to assist those who want to make contact with them. If a student sets out to look for the path, he shows a desire, which will be noted by those who watch on the inner planes, and he will be assigned to a group class according to his temperament. After he has gone a certain way under the tuition, he will be put in the care of what is called a guide, who is not to be confused with a spiritualist guide. A guide, in this terminology, is the first work assignment given to souls when they leave the physical plane for inner plane work. The guide will try to impress the teaching he wishes to convey on the soul of his pupil by what we would call telepathy, and the pupil must try to catch what is said. Later the pupil will be put in touch with one of the lesser inner plane adepts and be one of the number of pupils for whom that inner plane adept is responsible. A guide has only one pupil at a time, but an inner plane adeptus has many and is much more concerned with groups than individuals. As the pupil advances further, he will be passed to inner plane adepti of higher grades and different specialities. His problem will always be to listen and hear what his inner plane adept says. The higher the grade of the inner plane adeptus, the more remote he is from Earth beings. What are the inner plane adepti? Beings like yourselves, but without bodies. They have gained wisdom through experience and desire. They are not gods, they are not angels, they are not elemental, but are those individuals who have achieved and completed the same task as you have set for yourself. What you are now, they were once. What they are now, you can be. Have you so little belief in the survival of bodily death that you cannot conceive of the existence of the inner plane adepti? Have you so little belief in the doctrine of evolution that you cannot conceive of beings as greatly superior to your soul as you are to the animals? Have you so little knowledge of the power of the mind that you do not believe in the possibility of communication between you and them? If there is nothing higher than yourselves, what are you striving for? And if you accept the possibility of entities being higher than yourselves, why should you not also accept the possibility of communication with them? If you accept the possibility, why should you not try it? And if you try for it, why should you not expect that your first achievements would be rudimentary and imperfect and inaccurate? If you never make a beginning, you will never arrive at completion. You must be content to speak in broken tones before you can speak fluently. If you do not try, you will never learn to speak thus. You shall learn the language. You must understand that the inner plane adepti as you picture them, are all imagination. Notice well, that the inner plane adepti were not said to be imagination, but the inner plane adepti as you picture them are imagination. What the inner plane adepti really are you cannot realize, and it is a waste of time to try to do so. But you can imagine the inner plane adepti on the inner levels, and contact can be made through your imagination. Although the mental picture you may have is not solid or actual, the results of it are very real. As long as you are a concrete consciousness, you will have to use the imagination to reach the abstract. It is the laws of the constructive imagination that are taught in occult science. Constructive imagination is the use of the image-building faculty of the human mind in a definite, planned way. The inner plane adepti stress that it is impossible for a human being in incarnation to understand what the real state of inner plane existence is. Nevertheless, if the image-building faculty of the human mind is used to make a workable image of the inner plane adepti, then the inner plane adepti can contact the individual by using the image as a channel. Though the actual image is not real, the effect of the process is true because the inner plane adept has used the image to establish a working relationship with the person on the human plane. What is happening is that the laws of the astral plane, on which the image exists, are being used in developing a channel for communication between the planes. It should be recognized that the greatest privilege a human soul can receive is to be accepted by the inner plane adepti as a pupil. The attitude towards such training on the part of the pupil should be that of gratitude for the privilege. The pupil is trained simply in order that he may help others, not for himself alone. The soul that is ready for the training will not need any persuasion or special treatment. If it should be required, the soul is obviously unready. A teacher on the physical plane may pass a pupil out of pity, but be assured the inner plane adepti will not. The pupil must come up to the standard or be put back into the lower class to try again. The pupil can try as often as he likes, but to advance a soul to a stage to which it has not attained is a most cruel thing to do, as the forces it will meet will shatter it. In one sense, there is no hurry, you have all time. In another sense and on another plane, the work presses and you are urged forward. So, have patience on the outer, but on the inner plane onwards, for God awaits you. Dion Fortune would have said that a true occult group is a fraternity of people dedicated to helping humanity, and such a fraternity is founded by one of the inner plane adepti. It is a very difficult process for the inner plane adeptis on the inner planes, and has to make contact and work through someone on the physical plane in order to found a physical esoteric group. Some of the necessary requirements are: 1. The person on the physical plane will need a fair degree of developed psychism in order to establish contact with the inner plane adept. 2. The earth person must have a strong personality which is able to overcome the practical difficulties of starting an occult group. 3. The individual must be a comparatively advanced person esoterically. There are few people who have all three of these qualifications. There are many dominant personalities about, quite a large number of psychics and a fair sprinkling of spiritually advanced people, but the combination of all these in any one person is rare, because psychism goes almost invariably in hand with the sensitive temperament, which cannot cope readily with all the administration and finance problems involved in starting a group from scratch. H. B. Blavatsky was one example of a person who succeeded and Dion Fortune was another. As those in touch with the inner plane adepti proceed in their evolution, they are given certain work to do for themselves, and by those assignments, they themselves continue to learn. Such work given to a pupil by an inner plane adepti might not always sound very interesting, but the pupil has to begin with small matters. Very often, such people who are given lesser tasks are the guides. The occult guide on the inner planes is usually entrusted with a certain pupil to help him, report on him, and watch carefully over what he does. But also, those people in physical bodies on the physical plane who are developing contact with inner plane hierarchy are also given these tasks, and for them it is harder than someone who is permanently on die inner planes, because they have to attempt to get a clear telepathic impression of the duty to be carried out. It should be remembered that contact with an inner plane adept does not usually manifest in hearing particular words in the inner ear or seeing wonderful visions with the inner eye, but in a telepathic type of contact on an abstract mind level. As all contact with the inner planes is subjective, there is of course much room for error and delusion, and a very high degree of training is necessary before someone can bring through a message undistorted and untinged by his own preconceptions, prejudices, or unconscious complexes. This must account for a lot of the discrepancies in inspired writings. The word subjective, in the way it is used here, means within the consciousness of the person concerned, while objective means outside the individual consciousness and in the world. It is not until a group is sufficiently established to have a team of competent communicators whose work can be cross-checked by others who have enough telepathic contact to be able to judge intuitively what is true or false. There is a great difference between Eastern and Western teaching on this subject. The situation has not been clarified by the efforts of the Theosophical Society, despite the great good they have done, because they have taught Western people ideas that applied predominantly to the lifestyle of the East. In the esoteric, it is necessary to work according to the conditions where the work is being done. In the hurry of modern life in the West, with its increasing mechanization and the general noise and bustle, force cannot be concentrated as easily as in the more passive East. Nor are the bodies of Western men fit for constant going in and out of the physical body in doing the esoteric practices of the East. There is too much strain from the noisy world of the West, and for that reason ritual has been widely used as a powerful technique for concentrating power in certain channels and bringing it down to the physical plane in that way. It has often been said that certain adepti have been such and such a well-known historical figure in some incarnation. Very possibly they have, but there is always another possibility, namely, that the spirit of the inner plane adept may well have worked in the very dedicated pupil and have been so incorporated in that pupil mind and spirit, that it may give all the appearance of an incarnation, though in fact, it was not one. A particular pupil who makes an effective contact with an inner plane adept may undertake certain work for that adept and devote perhaps the rest of his life to it. If he remains true to his dedication, then he will become so attuned to the particular attitudes, experience, and dedication of the adept, that he will develop so many characteristics that when looked at historically, it may make him capable of being confused with the adept whose force he is mediating. Dion Fortune considered that the inner plane adepti who are in contact with dedicated groups on the physical plane help to bring in the next phase of human evolution, and it is interesting to take the development of the spiritualist movement and the Theosophical Society as examples of how this comes about. In the Victorian era, the occultists felt that the cycle of evolution had reached its most materialistic point, and now it was necessary to change direction and give new impetus in order to swing around the nadir and to move onward and up the evolutionary scale. First of all, it was necessary to wake up the ordinary Victorian who was rather dull and respectable and somewhat unimaginative and obsessed with a mechanical idea of science and the universe. They had no particular faith in the Protestant worship they practiced, and many did not believe in continuity of life. Therefore, that side of things had to be awakened in them. For that purpose, a movement known as spiritualism was set afoot by which, through mediums, those people could get into touch with their departed friends. This established a contact with the inner planes which the Victorians were able to believe with a conscious mind, and it really did not matter that this activity was often associated with the uneducated, the curious and the sentimental. The point is that in order to investigate this movement, persons in authority went out to look into these matters and found the inner plane adepti of higher grade and of different teaching. So the spiritualist movement actually prepared the ground in two ways. First, it started to move the stolid and unimaginative population of that time into considering that there might be other levels of consciousness in addition to that of the physical plane, and second, it prepared the people for a higher level of teaching which the inner planes began to send through. Therefore was the Theosophical Society begun through spiritualism and provided this meeting of the cultures of the East and West. Although the terminology was often confusing and living conditions were not right for the Eastern teaching, nevertheless a great movement was started to regenerate the group mind of the Western cultures at that time. The great inner plane forces began to penetrate the mundane minds of ordinary people all over the world and particularly in the West. Madame Blavatsky popularized the inner plane adepti, Mahatmas or masters, and there was much talk of their activities. It was believed that some of them lived in the mountain vastness of Tibet and that one or two of them walked about the streets and even attended Oxford University. There was quite a lot of nonsense taught, and it was the legacy of this misunderstanding of the inner plane adepti and their purpose that Dion Fortune set out to correct. As a rule, the inner plane adepti do not like details of their past lives to be given out, as this tends to limit people's conception of what they are now. An example often given is that of the Master Akashzai. This great being is often connected in popular occult books with the Comte de Saint-Germain, but anyone who knows much about the life of Saint-Germain and of what the Master Akashzai really is, will realize the irrelevance of associating the two together. The truth is that Akashzai was not Saint-Germain in a previous life, as popular theosophy would have one believe. Saint Germain was simply used by the Master Akashzai for certain work in a manner mentioned elsewhere. One must remember that the inner plane adepti have to use what tools they can get. The Comte de Saint Germain, himself, was by no means a master. The inner plane adepti are, of course, numerous. Kutumi and Moria were the Eastern masters behind the early Theosophical Society. The Venetian master was one who specialized in healing and was known as the Master of Medicine. He was a member of the great Inner Asclepian Order and had little patience with dabblers and meddlers. The Master David, who was one of the lesser English inner plane adepti, whose last incarnation ended on the battlefield during World War I, takes a great interest in youth. There is one particularly powerful being who is much concerned with esoteric groups in the Western world and who twice served as Lord Chancellor of England. The Master Hilarion, another interesting inner plane adept, is said to be particularly concerned with religions and movements affecting the mass of humanity. Some are masters of strength, others of compassion, and yet others, masters of wisdom. Greater even than these are the masters of the masters, of whom the Lord Jesus is said to be one. It was to these great beings that Dion Fortune dedicated her life. Whether one considers them fact or fiction does not matter. Throughout the teaching she received from these beings, the one thing stressed was the great spiritual journey. The powers of magic and occultism were simply to be regarded as a technology to serve that end. Next headline is, Trance Contact with the Inner Plane Adepts. Early in her occult studies, Dion Fortune attempted to use magic powers to free a girlfriend from the domination of her mother's actions. To do this, she gathered together a group of acquaintances who were either curious or mildly interested in the subject but completely untrained. They were instructed to make up some sort of a circle along spiritualistic lines with Dion Fortune seated in the leader's place, and then when things settled down, she gaily commenced to go into a trance. She left her body easily, did what she thought she had to do to accomplish the task at hand, and as she returned to her body, Dion Fortune found that she had been flung to the floor and was up against the wall. A man had been thrown on top of her and he was shivering with fright and terror, and the room was totally wrecked. She had loosened some type of uncontrolled force, which was still tearing about the room and creating an eerie feeling. Not only had the experiment done the immediate damage to the room, but also the presence of this force had awakened all of the babies in the town, and all of the dogs had started to bark. Chaos was rampant.